The Precinctor Raider Weekly Miniatures News Podcast is brought to you by Zero Dark Sci-Fi Skirmish Gaming in a Fallen Earth. You can find Zero Dark from Wargame Vault. Just go to wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
Welcome to another episode of the Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News Podcast. It is the 21st of May, 2020, and here is the news.
The news.
It's all Kickstarters this week. We're looking at a range of Kickstarters, starting with Impact Miniatures, who are producing another range of chibis. Chibi miniatures in their Siblings of Chaos range, all on Kickstarter now. Azars, or possibly Azars, Dungeon Madness is a dungeon exploring board game, which again is on Kickstarter now. And Miniboss Toys are producing the Monstro Kickstarter, another fantasy miniatures range, again in this cutesy form. And finally, Rodents of the Moon, again on Kickstarter, are producing a range of fantasy board game miniatures. So can you guess what this week's discussion is going to be?
The discussion.
This week's discussion is on the question of chibi aesthetics and the place of cuteness in wargaming. Now, I'm going to guess that most people listening to this podcast will have heard of chibi at this point, but if you haven't, I just sort of want to give a little bit of context. So right now, there's a surprising range of miniatures companies making chibi miniatures. I mentioned Impact Miniatures in the news. Perhaps more famously, Soda Pop Games made their Super Dungeon Explore game that was really, I suppose, probably the first chibi miniatures game, and they've got an extensive range of supporting miniatures. And then Games Workshop has teamed up with Bandai, not only to produce a limited edition Primaris Intercessor Space Marine, which if anybody has one and doesn't want it, please get in touch, but also to produce a range of chibi miniatures based on the Warhammer 40,000 setting. Now, chibi, the origins of the word chibi are a little bit disputed. They're all Japanese, obviously. It comes out of Japan and the anime and manga setting, and it probably means something like making smaller or diminutive, or it could be from a fairly obscure term meaning little, which turned up the first time in the Sailor Moon manga. Now, the use of chibi in manga and anime style is usually in one of two capacities. The first is depicting an actual young person. And it's interesting that a lot of artists will depart from, whilst the stylized anime approach, nevertheless a relatively realistic approach given the anime style, to render children in this chibi style in defiance of other conventions. So that's the first thing. So actual children. The other reason, and perhaps the more significant one for the context of what we're talking about, is using chibi to present an adult character or an older teen character metaphorically in a juvenile way. So, for example, when they are behaving in a juvenile fashion, or they're expressing an emotional feeling that a child would express physically, but which the reader is supposed to understand that the character can't physically express, but nevertheless are feeling it internally. Classic example that you'll see is basically a tantrum. So you will see a character go from being a normal adult figure in the next panel or two to being a chibi figure that is waving their arms and looking angry and possibly crying. They're not supposed to be in real life behaving in this way. They're using the chibi art style to indicate metaphorically how this character is feeling and expressing themselves. So they are expressing to the people around them that they are deeply upset, but they aren't literally having a tantrum and acting like a child, but at that moment they possess the vulnerability and emotional intensity of a small child. And the chibi style is supposed to express that metaphorical experience of the character. It lasts typically for a few panels and then it will return to normal. Okay. So when we're talking about chibi miniatures, we are almost exclusively talking about the second type. I can't think of any examples, but obviously I haven't seen every chibi miniature out there. But as far as I know, there are few to no chibi miniatures that are intentionally illustrating an actual juvenile human. They are instead presenting an adult human in a childlike way. So when you look at chibi drawing in this style, the chibis themselves are super stylized, and the degree of stylization varies depending upon the chibiness of what's being drawn. And the degree of chibiness runs from toddler through to prepubescent. And the distinction between those tends to be the proportional ratio of head to body. So the more head there is and the less body, the more toddlerish the character is presented as and the more stylized they become. So in chibi style, the most toddlerish drawings tend to have no hands at all. They've just got stick arms. A classic example in Western animation material is the Powerpuff Girls. If you look at the characters of the Powerpuff Girls, they are a distinctly chibi, toddlery style. They have no fingers, they have no toes. There's very little actual texture about them. Most of it is simply art style. And then you go up the scale through to sort of the prepubescent style, where actually you've got a fully proportioned body. You may have stubby fingers. You'll have actual feet, you'll have actual features, but the proportion of head to body is still very high. So they've got a disproportionately large head and a very slight body. It should be said that in this metaphorical use, almost entirely it is the toddler end of the spectrum that we're talking about. The prepubescent end of the spectrum is used almost exclusively in the first type of chibi, which is to depict actual juvenile characters. And this does apply when we're looking at chibi miniatures. Almost all of them have the proportions that indicate the toddlerized chibi. Okay. So this, I guess, brings me to perhaps if I have a problem, and problem is probably the wrong word, if I have a little bit of a complaint about how companies have consistently approached the chibiization of their miniatures, it is that they have adopted the proportions of the toddler chibi without adopting the stylization. Because even though you do, yes, get the classic anime big eye small mouth thing, you get a lot of detail on a lot of these miniatures. Many of them have fingers, for example. They have details sculpted into their torsos. They'll have pouches and bandoliers and holsters for their weapons and that kind of thing. And my impression in this is that artistically something is lost in the process of providing too much detail to the chibi. I think where it particularly tips over the edge is that they've adopted the toddler proportions and then applied adult sexualization. Now, the question of the sexualization of miniatures is a bigger discussion for another time. But when you are presenting characters in toddlerized chibi proportions, if you see it in anime and manga, they are stylized, they are blank, they are straight up and down, they are presented essentially as asexual beings, expressing themselves in child form. Whereas when you look at the miniatures being produced by Impact and Soda Pop and even Games Workshop, the particularly, obviously, the female miniatures here tend to be excessively, perhaps that's the wrong word. No, they are presented with adult female secondary sexual characteristics. So they have breasts, they have a narrow waist, they have wide hips. And I don't want to suggest that these companies are exaggerating these proportions at the same time. So they're not. But in my opinion, when you're presenting something in a toddlerized form, it presents a cognitive dissonance to then have the bodies of these toddlerized figures presenting secondary sexual characteristics. That seems weird and wrong to me. So that's where I sort of begin with my concern. Now, I did mention Impact at the start in the news. Now, I should refer to the fact that we've got these three other companies that I mentioned in news who've all got Kickstarters out at the moment. Azar is actually the designer. I don't know if he's also got a company. Miniboss and Rodents of the Moon, they are presenting characters that aren't in the chibi style exactly. Whereas Impact, Soda Pop, Games Workshop, they are all definitively chibi style, although we could come back to Games Workshop later. Impact, certainly, and Soda Pop, definitely presented in the chibi style. As are Miniboss and Rodents of the Moon, not chibi, but they are cute. So they've got exaggerated proportions, so the heads are large, the bodies are small, but they haven't adopted the eye-nose style of the anime manga approach. And it should also be said that in all those cases, as a result of that, where they have retained secondary sexual characteristics, it isn't as pronounced. Now, the reason I was going to mention Games Workshop here is because in their range of chibi miniatures, one stands out, which is the Sister of Battle. She stands out because she's the only one who's actually got a face that you can see. All the others wearing helmets or masks of some sort. And in her case, it's interesting that, yes, they've retained the secondary sexual characteristics of the body, and they've got the toddlerized proportions of head to body, but the way that the head is actually sculpted and presented, they haven't chibiized it. So really what they've taken is an anime style Sister of Battle. They've reduced the ratio of head to body proportions, so the body is much smaller, but they've really done nothing else. So in a way, I guess Games Workshop have kind of both dodged the bullet and missed the point at the same time. So they've presented something as chibi style. And it should be said that Bandai have to carry some responsibility for this. Whether it's good or bad, I leave to you. I don't really have an opinion. That they've kind of retained the sexualization but avoided the toddlerization by keeping the facial appearance of the character as an adult female, which then does raise the question of why bother presenting it as a chibi at all, to which the obvious answer is because people will just throw money at this stuff. So whilst I may have an artistic objection to what looks like an abuse of the chibi ideal for commercial purposes, I have to respect that Games Workshop, whether intentionally or by design, has addressed the problem, as I see it, in a way that allows them to still produce something that will sell like hotcakes whilst not crossing into the weird territory. And as are Miniboss and Rodents of the Moon, kind of do the same thing. They've achieved the same outcome, that they've got cute miniatures without them being problematic. Now, some of you listening to this may be thinking, well, Roby, this is clearly just your problem. And you know, I have to acknowledge that maybe that's the case, that it's just me that sees these things and thinks that it's weird. I mean, my premise for this podcast is that maybe it's not just me, and so I'm sort of putting that out there, and you can let me know. If you feel strongly that I am right or that I'm wrong, please do record a 10 to 15 minute audio clip of yourself. Email it in to me. I would love to include it in next week's podcast as a compilation of opinions and feedback from my listeners. Hey, look, if I don't get any, it'll be a regular podcast. If I just get one or two, it'll be most of a regular podcast, and I'll stick in your stuff at the end. If I get enough, I will make the whole podcast basically just you guys telling me that I'm wrong, which is completely fine with me. Okay, so let's move on a little bit within this topic, and we're still in discussion here, to talk about then, having established my reservations with the chibi approaches of Impact and Soda Pop, put that behind us, and let's just think about the role of cuteness in miniatures wargaming. Miniatures wargaming has had an image that in the last decade, maybe two decades, has started to become an image problem. And the image has consistently been of the white, heterosexual, middle-class male. That privileged view, and I know some of you who fall into that category may not feel particularly privileged, but believe me, if you weren't in that category, you would be more conscious of it. Obviously, I am in that category. I have had many encounters and conversations with people who aren't, that have persuaded me of the privilege that I enjoy falling into it. But it means that effectively, miniatures wargaming has been the preserve of what amounts to a social elite, whether or not you feel like you're part of one. And there have been a number of obstacles preventing those of us that would like to break down some of those barriers from doing so. And one of those obstacles has explicitly been that war games comes with certain macho connotations that are difficult to get over. Even when you add on the fact that we're all basically just guys playing with our dollies on a table, it still carries a certain, as I say, machismo to it that's hard to overcome. And introducing cuteness to your design aesthetic is a terrific, easy tool to overcome part of that obstacle, that you immediately disarm both the perception of the observer and some of the behavior of the participant when you participate in a game that it is designed aesthetically to appear cute. It creates a distancing from the topics of pain and death and combat and all those sort of nastier aspects that we address through miniatures wargaming, and instead presents it as something safer and more accessible to people who don't fall within our privileged elite. But whilst it distances, it also proximates. That is, it draws closer the experience of the game being make-believe, of it being a kind of fairy story. And distancing from the bad stuff, proximating to the imaginative good stuff, sounds like unalloyed goodness, but in a way, I'm not completely happy that it is. I think to an extent, the fact that wargaming acknowledges that it is part of a war is one of its strengths. And I won't pretend that wargaming is, you know, a problem-free argument against real-time war. It really isn't. But it certainly doesn't help to pretend that those things aren't real. And again, the approximation of the imaginative component, the make-believe aspect, is good because we should want to encourage people to engage imaginatively more with the experience on the tabletop, because I think that ultimately enhances everybody's experience. But at the same time, you can proximate too close towards the, oh, it's all just made up, it's all just a story, a little bit along the lines of something fun like Turn Signals on a Land Raider, where everybody meets for a drink and heads back into the miniatures case afterwards for a rest. Joe, is that what we're doing, or are we telling stories that are real, that come alive in our imaginations, and that matter to the participants who may be hurt or may lose their lives in the course of the actions that we decide to take? I don't know. I don't have a definitive answer to that question. It cuts both ways, and I suspect your mileage may vary, and it comes down to that. So on the plus side, we are improving access to the game for children and minority represented groups. Fact is, like it or not, our hobby and our hobby community can appear threatening to those who are not part of our group. And maybe, if the opportunity arises, I will talk about how our hobby threatens outsiders in a future podcast. Some may find it just too politically correct to even want to engage with. I respect that. I understand it. They have told me before, please get your politics out of my hobby. I understand where you're coming from. But I'm podcasting as a participant in the hobby, as a designer for the hobby, as a trader in the hobby, and my livelihood is based upon my products reaching the largest possible audience. And your enjoyment of the hobby is also predicated on being able to find opponents. So my argument here is that it is good to break down barriers. It is good to improve access to the hobby for the maximum number of people. I consider that to be an unalloyed positive. Correction. It's not unalloyed. And actually, this is a good example of why. So there are weirdnesses in this, because currently our population of players is what it is. And when you start introducing cuteness, you do start potentially making it look a bit weird. Is that it? I mean, we've already acknowledged that we're grown men playing with our dollies. If our dollies are now literally dollies, how much weirder does the experience become to the outside observer? And I guess to a degree I'm talking about the Brony effect here. If you've not come across that, this is adult male enthusiasts for the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic range of cartoons, comics, and toys. And I should say games. Now, I would be the first to defend any person, adult, male, female, whoever, from expressing their enthusiasm for the things that they love however they please. And I would go to the barriers to defend that. But there is no avoiding the fact that those of the MLP fan group who are self-identified bronies can be perceived as being a bit odd in a way that outsiders can in itself perceive as threatening. So turning it back to the subject of cuteness within wargaming and miniatures wargaming and its role, on the one hand, yes, a degree of cuteness does make us look less threatening. On the other hand, it can also make us look weird and ergo more threatening. And I think that is particularly true, going back to where I began, when you have companies like Impact and Sodapop that misunderstand and misapply the artistic concepts of the chibi in a way that leaves them still as sexualized individuals, and it makes us look weirder. That is my take on it. By all means, disagree. let me know, record it, tell me I'm wrong, I will happily put it on the air. As with so many things that I'm going to talk about here, do you know what? They're not a huge deal. I'm not talking about these things shouldn't happen, they shouldn't exist, we should shut down these companies. No, absolutely not. I am 100% a defender of the right of individual creators, artists, and companies to artistically express their vision in a way that they like. And I'm equally a defender of the right of the consumer to purchase products that appeal to them and their aesthetic, whatever they might be. I'm just putting out there what may be the unintended consequences of those decisions so that we can be informed consumers. That's it. Okay, that's enough discussion. Let's move on to the next section.
Precinct Omega.
So how does all this that I've discussed fold back onto what I do as the owner of a miniatures wargaming company and as the designer of tabletop games? Well, first of all, I believe, as I think I've expressed, that anything that makes our hobby less threatening is a good thing that is only going to help me and other manufacturers and traders sell more stuff and therefore be more financially secure. And if we're more financially secure, we produce more stuff for you guys to enjoy. It's a virtuous circle. That said, sexualizing the presentation of cuteness within the hobby, especially prepubescent cuteness, is weird and bad. That is my opinion. I won't dwell on that, but let's turn that back to my business and how that impacts. Well, when I'm writing a game, when I'm designing a product and putting it out into the market, I spend a lot of time thinking about what it communicates, both consciously and subconsciously, in terms of its setting, its art, the miniatures that I choose, the words that I choose. Do you know, I try really hard to make sure that I use gender-neutral language throughout my game designs. And when I'm presenting examples of people, be they characters in the game or players outside of the game, I make a conscious effort to try and present them as a mix of genders and ethnic backgrounds to make sure that I am sending as conscious and explicit a message that I believe this is a hobby that should be accessible to people outside the traditional image of the tabletop gamer. So, you know, that's something that feeds back into my game. But at the same time, whilst making the hobby less threatening is good, I do believe that... See, I've written in my notes there's a line, but I don't think there is a line. What there is a spectrum. And the point where we cross over from de-escalating the obstacles to trivializing the subject matter is a really hard one to pinpoint. As a designer, you need to keep it uppermost in your mind. No, that's not fair. You don't need to keep it uppermost in your mind, but you do need to keep it in the back of your mind and do regular sort of checks on yourself and checks on your text and your designs. You can't check it against some objective standard of where that line is, because there is no line. The best you can do is check it against your own values, check it against the values of the people that you're trying to reach as your customers, and most importantly, check it against how much fun your game is to play. At the end of the day, what we want is a game that people will enjoy playing. And enjoying playing doesn't just mean innovative mechanics and a compelling narrative. It also means a story that doesn't upset people in the course of its telling. And I guess a really good example speaking to that is Kingdom Death. Now, I think Kingdom Death is an extraordinary product. And as a game, it is something almost completely novel in our market that I have enjoyed playing. But, oh my word, that is a game packed with trigger warnings. I mean, there are people who should not play that game ever. And there are people who might enjoy that game, but who need to know that if they've got traumatic stuff in their past, they need to talk to their fellow players about it, at least enough to let them know that there's stuff that they find triggering that you need to gloss over and move past in the game, just like in any roleplay game. And so clearly Kingdom Death is a game that is a lot further over where I would consider to be my moral line. That doesn't make it a bad game. That doesn't make it a bad product. It just makes it a game that presents obstacles that people need to know about in advance. And the fact that there are ethical lines in entertainment is something that, you know, I deliberately lampooned in Horizon Wars. If you've read the setting of the game, there are two settings that address this and give you a sense, not necessarily of where I feel I sit ethically, but at least where the line sits, or where the line may be, and we need to be aware of it. So the first is in Era 3, Era 2. Era 2, during the Colonial War, when the war between Mars and Venus is de-escalating because the companies behind it have run out of money. But the entertainment companies on Earth step in to keep pouring money into the war, not because they've got any political axe to grind, but because it makes great reality television. You know, the question of where does the line lie when we're entertaining people, I think it's clear to anybody, I hope it's clear to anybody reading that, that is satire, and those companies have clearly crossed way over an ethical line. The fact that it takes them so long to notice, again, is part of the satire, that when people are making money out of something, they can feel too comfortable with crossing ethical lines if they can sleep happily on their bed of cash at night. So that's the first thing. The second one was in Era 4, in a different way, when people in Era 4 are post-human. That is, they don't die in a conventional sense because their identity and their memories and their self is backed up in what amounts to the cloud at the time. So they can go in and participate in violent sports and military reenactments in which they are actually killed and shot and maimed, and all those things can happen, but it doesn't matter because they've got a backup. And in contrast to Era 2, I think the ethical line there is more complex. That is it fine because nobody really dies, or is it bad because it de-escalates the experience of pain and death for people who no longer really understand what pain and death are? And yes, that's far future, but I don't like to have to explain satire. Obviously, any joke gets so much better when you explain it. But it obviously, I hope, is a reference back to us in the 21st century observing pain and death through the lens of the media and treating it as entertainment that doesn't affect us, and not thinking about how it affects those who are actually subject to it. So I hope that shows that there are some ethical lines in the practice of game design and being a war games company trader that need to be kept in mind, that can be illustrated well in all sorts of media, amongst which are miniatures, and that cuteness and the use of cuteness to break down barriers of entry into wargaming is great, but it is not without its problems. And that doesn't mean it shouldn't happen. That doesn't mean that these miniatures shouldn't exist. Categorically do not mean that. What I do mean is that you as listeners, I hope, should be interested that the process of design and product development should take these concepts into account. And if it doesn't, people need to think about it. Doesn't mean they need to change their minds or do anything different, but they should at least be applying thought to this before they reach their conclusions, not simply putting products into the market because, hey, this will make us lots of money. Not the way you should go about business, particularly not in the 21st century. Okay, I think I've spoken more than enough. I've had a great time on this podcast, as I always do. I will be here again next week, but I would love to hear your thoughts on any of the topics that I've covered. And just to recap, I have covered the question of whether it is ethical to make commerce on the back of somebody else's aesthetical vision, specifically the case of people who make miniatures that fit into the Warhammer 40,000 grimdark aesthetic picture, but don't give Games Workshop any credit. The second one was about Kickstarter and its positives and negatives to the world of game development, and whether it is an overall good or bad, and I made lots of points in that you might like to pick up on. And this week we're talking about cuteness, the role of cuteness, and the danger of cuteness and sexualization within miniatures gaming, but we will probably hit the question of sexualization in much more detail in a future podcast. If you've got thoughts or feedback on any of those topics, a 10 to 15 minute recording, do it on your phone, email it into me. I would love to include it in the next episode. That will be next week. Thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please listen to the bumper that tells you where you can go to support more of these occurring, and go out there and buy Zero Dark. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you next week.
The Precinct are made of weekly miniatures news podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/precinctomega to support the Patreon, developing new miniatures games and creating hobby content for Wargames miniatures enthusiasts all over the world.